Welcome to the Move Minds podcast. And now here are your hosts, Bill Alvsted and Sherry Koretke. Hello and welcome into the Move Minds podcast. I'm Bill Alvsted. I'm here with Sherry Koretke. Good morning, Sherry.
Good morning, Bill.
How are you today?
Good.
Excellent.
Good.
Excellent. So how have things been going? We've been off for a few weeks on kind of a sabbatical. We had Thanksgiving and the December rolled around and I got a little sick and we've kind of been getting ready for Christmas and doing some other things and we're back at it today.
Exactly.
Exactly. So
we took a little break and now we're back into action.
One thing we did do that I think that we should probably say out loud, because I think I'm proud of it, is we finished our little free ebook that we've got in the background. In order to get it, what do you have to do?
Just go to our homepage, and it's right there in the top. All you have to do is click on there and give us your email address and we'll deliver it to you.
Okay. And what is it about?
It's about creating this social purpose culture and your role in it.
Awesome. Awesome. And so it's kind of a glimpse into our book that we're writing. And it was kind of our way to kind of get a head start into our book and put something on our website that we could generate a little bit of buzz, a little bit of interest in what we're currently doing, what we've researched, kind of serve as a little bit of a motivation for us to get something done and get something out there, but to also put something in the hands of people to let them know what it is we're trying to say, what we're talking about as far as what a social purpose culture is and what kind of people we need to participate in it. And the roles are huge and varied and there's room for everybody. And I think that if you were to go on there and take a look, that you would find your place in that culture. So please do that, because that would be awesome to have you on our subscription list. That way, not only do you get the download of the report, which is a 22-page report, and it's fairly comprehensive, but you also get updates on any original content that we put out onto our website, and you're subscribed to the podcast, so you get notifications when the podcast comes out on a weekly basis. So today, I think that we wanted to spend some time, and a term that we've used in the past, on the Band-Aid approach to solving social problems, and why they don't necessarily work very well. It's really a stopgap and a short-term way of looking at solving problems. And while some of them are necessary to have in solving problems, we do need to understand that they are temporary and that they don't solve the underlying issues that are present when we do put a Band-Aid on something. Do you have anything that you want to add right off the top?
Well, I was thinking what we're trying to get across here is that when we focus on certain social issues and not what causes them in the first place, that's what the whole Band-Aid approach is. And why that's so important to us is that we're sitting here spinning our wheels trying to figure out how come there's still certain issues like homelessness and hunger and all this sort of stuff, and we're not really addressing the underlying issues.
So, for example, if we have, say, a concert to benefit a certain thing, let's just say homelessness. You raise the issue of homelessness. So we have a concert to benefit the homeless population in a certain city. We have, you know, three or four bands come together. The invitations go out. The publicity goes out for the show. A certain portion of the ticket purchase goes towards a fund that essentially is given then to an organization or two that helps either prevent homelessness or provide shelter for homeless folks, or feeds them, or provides clothing, or so forth. So not only is the event a Band-Aid, but the solution is a Band-Aid. And while it feels good to do that, it's not a permanent solution. It's not an ongoing solution. It might help for that month that the event was in. But beyond that, then the money stops flowing. The issue is died down and no longer prevalent in the minds of all those that participated, and it just kind of goes away. You know, maybe it's a annual thing and it reoccurs the following year or so forth, but it really only helps for a certain amount of time and it's not sustained.
Yeah, I think my thought is, I am not saying that any of these approaches, nonprofits, any kind of fundraising is useless. That's not what I'm saying.
And,
I'm saying
that's not what we said at
is
the top.
Where's the group of people that is saying, let's solve this in the long term? The people that are really compassionate and empathetic.
Are we talking about our politicians here?
We're talking about you and me, actually. That's why we're doing this, is we're saying that a lot of the problems we see out there are cultural issues or economic issues or educational issues, and they're larger issues that need to be solved in order to solve something in the long term, so that we're not constantly trying to prevent something or to stop something or to help somebody in the short term.
Is this what we mean when we've talked about a holistic approach to solving problems? Is this what we mean?
Yes.
When we talk about, if we're going to solve homelessness, let's go all the way to the root. What causes homelessness? How do we become homeless? Why does somebody choose that path and go further back? And we'll talk about childhood education. We talk about opportunities of employment. We talk about adequate housing opportunities and availability. I mean, there's countless issues that surround the idea of being homeless. There could be domestic violence issues. The homelessness is not just a male problem. This is a family problem. This is a female problem. This is a society problem. And there's all sorts of issues surrounding that need to be addressed simultaneously to address that problem from multiple sides at the same time, creating equal force and coordination from multiple agencies and facets of society to address the issue. Otherwise, this thing will live on in perpetual state.
Yeah, there'll be constant people trying to start foundations and nonprofits. And while they're all great, I think that we need to start thinking of how to solve things permanently or in the long term, as opposed to, you know, struggling with an issue over and over and over again. If you've been alive long enough, you can see the same issues popping up so many times and you're like, why hasn't this been solved in the 50 years? And I'm sure that
part of the reason is that what one agency or group would coordinate such an effort?
We see things, when you say holistic, we also see the big picture of everything. And we see how a lot of issues are interconnected with each other. And so that's why we're focused on the cultural aspects of social issues and what contributes to them. But, you know, there's a lot involved in everything that we see. So I don't know if there'll ever be one, like,
master solution.
But maybe that's what we're headed is...
Well, I think that's why we...
Getting people to realize...
I think that's why at Move Minds, and you and I in particular, are working on social purpose culture, is we are trying to speak to individual issues that hopefully add up in the end to solve lots of problems or reduce problems in general so that we don't have these larger issues. So, for example, we like to talk about children and education and family. And values and nonviolence and our media. And we're trying to speak to each of these issues independently, but really they're connected together. But if they're independently addressed and I'm not going to say solved, but spoken about and addressed to a point where we're actively trying to create solutions to some of these individual things together, added up, as a culture and society, we're reducing the level of problem issues that we have. And it makes these what are now very large issues become reduced. Is that what we're trying to do here? I mean, it's hard articulate what it is we're trying to say, but to me that's what it is we're trying to create multiple avenues of approaches solving problems where they pop up, giving people the tools necessary to identify problems in general, become more emotionally fit, healthier, so that they're able to see these issues and address them as they come up.
I think also what we're trying to do is get people to see their part, their role in a lot of the social issues, even though you believe that you have no part in anything that you're seeing out there. But as a culture, we do have play a part into a lot of them. So if we change our behavior, or if we are just aware of what's going on and stop trying to hide from certain things, I'm trying to think of a really good example. Racism is a big cultural issue.
Let's talk about parents. What can parents do? What role do parents have as a parent in a responsibility towards the purpose culture?
Well, we could go. I think we talked about having a whole podcast about parenting and how right. we contribute and how we raise our kids and how that contributes to the overall lot of the issues that we see out there.
I mean, we could talk about parents. But we could talk about politicians. We could talk about business leaders. And there's all sorts of different roles that you can play, but let's focus on one or two. If you want to pick a different one, that's great. But let's focus on one and kind of drill down a little bit and talk about what we're talking about.
When I was talking about racism, and that's been something that we've been talking a lot about lately. And we want to sweep it under the rug and say it doesn't exist or that there's not really a problem.
Well, the Supreme Court said that it was solved. That's essentially by overturning a voting rights law that had been standing in several states to make sure that equal voting rights were essentially mandated by law. So that was kind of, they wiped that out and said, hey, we don't see any more problems. So, hey, it's all over. Problem solved.
And yeah, that really. Would be nice if somebody would just wave a magic wand and it would be over. But it's going to take a lot more effort, and how we all play a role in, let's say, something as like racism is just being woefully ignorant about some of the issues that other cultures and other races go through.
Why should I, as a white male, middle-aged, care? Why do I care about somebody else's culture?
It's not their culture you need to care about. It's the person. When we put up roadblocks between each other based on our race, our gender, our weight, or whatever issues that we like to throw in about each other, we're disconnecting from the fact that we're actually all human. Those are all not cosmetic. They're just genetic differences, or they're not even cultural. We tend to adopt cultural issues to just give us some sort of foundation and a link to the past. But really, when we strip all that away from each other, we're all human beings. And we need to care about each other just because of that, because we are all neighbors. We are all interconnected by being neighbors in the whole world. You know, we want to say that we're...
So how is attributing a band-aid approach to solving some racial issue allow us to lose sight of what you just said?
It's what you mean, like we earlier we were talking about affirmative action or some sort of the things that we tried in a band-aid approach.
In a private
approach.
Conversation, not on the podcast, yeah, but privately together.
Yeah, we have a lot of private conversations that sometimes pop up here on the podcast. But, you know, we're talking about affirmative action and how that tends to be a band-aid approach. And when
how has it
and
been
then
good?
How you can relate
how
that
has
to
it been
parenting.
Good though first why did we need it, and how has it worked to the point where we've had it for so long?
See, when you have a band-aid approach and then you use it to try to solve an overall issue, it's not, it's just, you know, with the wound is festering underneath and it's just getting too big for certain actions or laws or anything to implement. It's because we need to change the way we think and see as a society.
So affirmative action kind of allows us to use it as an excuse
to not, solve.
Participate further.
To not do the hard work.
Keeps the status quo.
Yeah, we need to do the hard work at looking at ourselves and, like I said, how we contribute to everything, every social issue that we can, you know, really think about. How do we each individually contribute to any of these issues? And when you look at it, it could just be apathy at the very base, but that also that you're contributing in other ways.
So is a Band-Aid approach just a general laziness then? If you're saying that we need to work hard?
I think what I'm saying is that we need more big picture people out there saying, hey, you know, this is great that people are out there trying to solve these issues, but this is what we need. I think
that you're saying that we're mentally lazy by not wanting to go deeper into solving some of these problems.
Actually, I don't think we're mentally lazy. I think a lot of people see a need and see it as an emergency and want to help and solve it right now. That people are suffering or having problems right now. And so what's the first thing when somebody gets injured is that we just, you know, we want to treat the wound and then, you know, put a Band-Aid over it. But then there's the scars and everything underneath there that's going to take a lot longer to heal. So instead of just focusing on the wound.
Or there's the reason why they got caught in the wound in the first place.
Exactly.
Like a sharp table corner or something sticking out or whatever.
Like I had this pen that kept scratching me and I couldn't figure out why. And it wasn't until I realized it was the pen that was giving me these deep scratches. I was like, oh, heck, you know, threw the pen away.
Exactly.
Okay, that was really simple. But no, really. But I kept scratching myself because I didn't know why, you know, it was happening. And that's how we do. That's how we treat a lot of social issues. And this is in no way saying that anybody who's out there trying to help and be out there solving problems, that they're doing it wrong. That's not what we're saying. We're saying that other people need to start tackling the issues that are underneath those issues to give these people support so they have less demand and less problems and less money they need to raise to help solve the really serious issues.
So in a way, we're still
issues.
Asking for people to be accountable. So they recognize,
we're going back to our...
so they recognize the issues. Because without the accountability part, we don't even go there. That's what I mean. I think when I'm talking about laziness... and the mental laziness that we have. I'm not saying that people are lazy when they're trying to do the best that they can in solving an issue. I'm saying as a culture and a society, we've allowed ourselves to allow others to throw Band-Aids on it and be okay with that and not do anything else about it. And that there's no accountability at that point. We have literally resigned our accountability at the door when we stop short of trying to solve the larger issue. And there are people in place in leadership positions that have the ability to work on these larger issues. I'm not saying that a lot of folks are in a position to really address these things and solve these things. But there are politicians, business leaders, and so forth that are in place to begin to address some of these larger things that really end up going festering.
Right. If it goes back to what you were saying about mental laziness, which I think is more about like apathy and not paying attention and being distracted by other issues or your own personal life, that we're not really hearing some of the messages that are, you know, the actual people out there really trying to make a big cultural change or economic change or any kind of change that would solve any of those issues. We're not literally listening to them. And we need to start paying attention to what other people are saying, how to solve something in the long term. It's not just about the short term.
Well, we need then our biggest leaders, our biggest corporations, our largest figureheads to help guide us in the right direction.
Yes, in episode 27, we are going to, let's go really deep into leadership.
Well, we're only
leadership.
On episode 24, so.
I know, we have a couple of to do, but I have a leadership episode planned, and I think we really need to talk about how a lot of us need to step up into leadership roles and pass on this message that we're trying to get across is that we need people to start paying attention, and the more leaders there are out there, maybe the problem, there's just not enough, or there's too much competition with all the other stuff that we're distracted by in the media or news or whatever. You know, we tend to be easily distracted by things nowadays and not really seeing what's going on deeper. And I think it's not just laziness. I think it's willing to invest some emotional depth into our lives and how we all work together and live together and how we're all part of the society.
Well, you know, what are some of the underlying issues that might keep us from having that sort of focus?
I think it's when we're easily distracted by our own issues that we have.
Our own behavior, our own issues, yes. Our own interpersonal relationships.
And I think that exactly. Everything we've always come back to in this podcast and in our research is that it always comes back to ourselves. We want to go outside of ourselves and blame things. But when we look at ourselves and how we contribute to everything, it's like, how do I ignore something, or how do I not pay attention to what's going on because I'm so immersed into my own world?
Is it, how about like the victim, the idea of being a victim as an excuse? Not, I'm not talking about an immediate victim of rape or a victim of homicidal violence or, you know, all those things that are absolutely real and disrupt life as we know it. I'm talking about being the victim as in using it as an excuse for being immobilized by not doing something because it's too hard or somebody wronged me or I lost my job or, you know, my car broke down. Or we use a lot of excuses for why we don't do things, is what I'm trying to say. How does that play into what we're talking about?
I don't know. Sometimes I think we're just sold on the idea of feeling helpless.
Well, let me ask you this. You wrote down a list. Specifically, I want to talk about this list. You wrote down some key words that I think that it would be great if we went into a little bit and tried to understand exactly what it is you were trying to say here and how it relates to why we're stopped from being the best that we can be.
Okay, let's start off with the first one, which was violence. We tend to look at each individual instance of violence and we get shocked. We're horrified. We're busy talking about the actual event that was so horrific. And then we bicker about why the violence started in the first place. And we try to place blame on the parents or video games or something in particular. Prescription drugs has been also a new one that we were bringing. And yes, they all do contribute, but there's also a underlying cultural aspect of us that I don't want to say likes violence, but we tend to glorify it in ways. If you look at a lot of our TV programs, if we listen to a lot of the music, the videos, music videos and video games that kids are playing.
Sure.
And there's a part of us that likes it. And why is that?
I love football, but I can see how some people can easily argue that football is a violent sport.
Yeah, when I watch football, I think of gladiators. It's just our more sophisticated way that we're not actually physically trying to kill people.
The only reason that I can justify in my own mind the sport of football, and I love football, and I've played football, and I got a lot out of it on a personal level, from a leadership standpoint, inspiration, and so forth. The only way that I can justify football itself is it's self-contained on a field, 50 yards wide, 100 yards long, that is separate. I can separate from my own life, and I compartmentalize it into that one space. And I would never be violent or try to hit somebody in real life out in the public like they do on the field. And so all that hitting goes on the field, it's on the field.
Right. But then,
but a lot of people don't. A lot of people don't have that ability to separate.
Well, my daughter came home the other day and told me about her friend who just got a new Xbox and how horrible she was at playing this one game. And so I asked her, what was this game you were playing? And she said it was something like Assassin's Creed, or is that what it's called?
There is a game there.
Yes. Yeah. And I said, well, okay, what do you do in Assassin's Creed? And it's, you learn how to assassinate people.
Sneak up on people, assassinate them.
Really? This is what we're teaching kids, is how to kill people. This is what I'm talking about, is if we're glorifying these things in these games. Like, there's this one commercial with this beautiful blonde walking through a battlefield. And in our minds, we're thinking, beautiful blonde. And I know she's fictional, you know.
Oh, drawing. She's not fictional. No, she's the model from the Sports Illustrated swimsuit.
Yes, thing. Well, it's still glorified name, but, image of her in a beautiful white dress walking through a battlefield with all these men battling, and you're in your mind, you're thinking violence, beauty, violence, beauty, and how are they equated in people's minds? It's slowly moving into our world when we think about and fantasize about and watch violent movies. So in a way, we do contribute in a subtle way.
It's stylized, it's virtual reality, but it's so virtual that it's basically the way that our mind chemistry reacts to it. It is real.
Yes. You know, we could go on and on about that one. So,
and I don't understand enough about video game violence and the cultural aspects of it and the way that it is portrayed, and you know, studies that have been done on, you know, translating that into real violence in the real world and kids. And so I can't speak completely directly to it. I do know one thing as a parent, is I keep my own child away from all of that. He's strictly forbidden from doing any of that stuff. He's 8 years old, so he hasn't even got to the point yet where there's interest in that. But at one point, I think he did try to download some first-person shooter, cartoonized first-person shooter game from the Play Store, and I caught him, essentially, and I was like, no. And he immediately knew that it wasn't going to be good, and he was wrong. But anyway, that's kind of off the point a little bit. So there's violence.
Let's talk about obesity.
Okay. So there's a lot of shame. There's personal shame, and then there's shaming somebody.
Well, also how we all contribute to it, as in the overall big picture. Everybody talks about, in particular, the American culture is growing heavier and heavier, and
so there's the health
want
aspect to it.
Yeah, they want, people want to, and some of the Band-Aid approaches is taxing candy or soda, or shaming people, restaurants, into posting all the calories on a board so that you walk in and you know exactly how many calories something has in it. And how that's a Band-Aid approach is, first of all, if I'm in a restaurant buying something in there, maybe that is part of the problem. As in, restaurants and all the different foods that we eat in these restaurants contribute to the overall problem, not just how many calories, but just the, you know, dining out. It's the quality of the food, but also it's the ads. It's the way we glorify, my new word today, glorify, is, you know, all the food ads and all the, like, for instance, Super Bowl is a great gluttonous time, mm-hmm. where we overeat, or Thanksgiving, or all these little different events that we have in there. And we just kind of, on one hand, we're shaming people for being overweight and saying you need to control your calories. And the other, we're really heavily...
And we're romanticizing it.
Yeah. In a sense. Food is everywhere. And imagery of food and food network and food, it's like food, food, food. But then you're saying, on the other hand, you need to be slim and you need to, you know, we don't like to look at you because you're overweight. And some of it is kind of that blatant where... And don't believe me, this is not a criticism, because I could lose a few pounds. But it's what I'm saying is that when we're confronted on one hand with all the imagery and everything that's messages that say that we need to dine at this restaurant or eat these potato chips or whatever, and then we wonder why people are having a hard time because it's all glorified. Let's talk about our favorite commercial with Carl's Jr. and the beautiful woman who is eating a triple-decker burger. Yes. And it's...
That's ridiculous.
Yes.
And we know it's ridiculous.
Oh, yeah.
But we love... There's something about that commercial where... No, I don't care who you are.
That appeals...
You look at that thing and you're just like, you drool. I mean, you're just literally, you're either drooling for her or you're drooling for the burger.
I'm looking at it going, that looks like a 1,000-calorie burger.
Absolutely.
And this woman is supposed to be eating this burger and look like that? Right. There's just no way.
Correct.
But that isn't logical in your mind. You think you could look like that girl and eat a 1,000-calorie burger and be fine. And not only is it, it's awfully sexualized in the way that this burger is sold. So they're matching two different basic instincts into one ad that hits people thinking that, I don't know, it's okay to just gorge on this burger. Well, anyway, there's a lot of, we could go on and on and on. We could have individual, in fact, let's do that someday. Let's do some individual episodes about some of the stuff we see that's kind of ridiculous and how we can combat a problem when there's powerful forces out there spending millions of dollars advertising to us to eat certain stuff and to be certain in a certain way.
Awesome. I think that's great. Well, you know, we have a little bit further to go on this. And I don't know what you want to do because we're at 31 and a half minutes here and we haven't even gotten through about half of what I wanted to talk about, especially moving beyond Band-Aids and kind of creating some solution ideas. But do you want to keep going for a couple minutes?
Well, maybe I'll just, you know what?
Create another podcast.
We could do, send everybody to our show notes and,
okay.
I think you'll get the overall idea. You know, I had overspending, I had health, education, body images, it was bullying. So there's all different ways that we contribute to all this sort of stuff. And, I think it would be fun if we explored them next year on our podcast. So
okay, awesome. I think adding to the show notes on this stuff would be great. That way they can read some of the moving beyond the Band-Aid ideas that we wrote down. And it's an interesting topic. And I felt like when we were talking about it, sometimes we moved away from it a little bit and we got kind of started on other stuff that we're really passionate about. And then we kind of came back to it a little bit. So it's, I don't want people to be confused at what we're talking about. It is really important that we understand why we do put Band-Aids on things, which we need to do often to create temporary solutions that solve immediate problems. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. And there's no reason that we should discontinue doing that. And those things are needed when we have such critical issues in our culture that go on every day that we need to address.
You know what? I just realized what we completely missed on this is that what I'm trying to say or what we've been trying to say is that it's hard to solve certain social issues when you've got other people with a hidden agenda or even an open agenda that wants to keep people in a certain way financially. So particularly the health and overspending and obesity. If you're trying to fight those social issues out there and you've got forces out there that have financial benefits to keeping people a certain way, it's going to be really hard to fight those sort of things.
And so we do need to encircle.
So
this
that's why this
issue.
Culture thing is so important, is because it has to be solved on a bigger level than just tackling individually.
Perfect, excellent. Thanks, Sherry, for the great conversation. Find out more about what we've just talked about on the show notes on our website, movemindsglobal.com. You can find us on Stitcher and iTunes as well. We're on social media, Twitter, at Move Minds Global, Facebook, Google+, etc.
Yep. Thank you for listening.
Thanks a lot. Take care. To learn more about our movement to create a social purpose culture, visit our website at movemindsglobal.com. There you can listen to more podcasts, read articles, catch up on the latest news, and visit our ever-growing research center.